right. All right, here we go. Good timing. I got it. Here you go. Hey, Tom, sorry about that.
Hello, what's the holdup? Beautiful day
out. Tight security.
Yep. Diving in.
Gather around, animals. Let me hear you. Are they all there, Sean?
They're all here.
By the way, got a lot of reaction to the horses that you have named, and look forward to hearing their names again today. So hopefully you remembered what you called.
Oh, I do remember, yeah. I'm going to change.
Save that
I'm
again?
I'm going to change one of them, but you don't know which one.
Oh, here she comes out. Rumpelstiltskin, here she is.
I'm not sleepy. Right. I did get stuck in a Zoom, though. I couldn't get you guys. But now I have you, so it's all good.
Stuck in a Zoom.
In a Zoom.
Wow. Wow. All right. Okay. The
everybody's worst nightmare. No.
You, when this story, the Blake sort of law came out, and you explained this to us a while ago, Hannah, was that it was a woman who got stopped by the police. They then searched her. They found drugs on her possession. She said, these are not my jeans. These belong to a friend of mine. And then at that point, it then sort of created this entire process by which people started to look at that you have drugs, but you're unaware of the fact that the drugs are on you, or you don't even can't tell where they came from. So therefore, it then started the snowball down the hill that the person couldn't be charged with possession of drugs. Is that sort of just the general sort of way 36,000 foot view on this?
There is no drug possession law in the state right now for felonies because of the Supreme Court decision. And it was all hinged on that word knowingly not being in the current law and not being in there since 1971. So most states actually had something similar. I had similar issues where that was an issue that they had to fix. But most states fixed it a long time ago. We had not. And there was a lawsuit because of some woman who had a little bit of meth or something in her pocket that from pants that somebody else gave her or something along those lines. And that's why it came up. And that's why the decision from the court. But it honestly, I think the Seattle Times headline when they wrote the story called it a bombshell. I've used the word shocker. It took the entire criminal justice and treatment community in this whole state by surprise. Nobody saw it coming. So they've just been, you know, trying to figure out what to do since then. You've got at the local level prosecutors who are having to vacate sentences, but there's only already the prosecuting offices have been behind because of COVID, and some courts are open, some courts are not, and they don't have enough staff. So it's a lot of work to go back through all these cases. So they're going as fast as they can, but it's not fast enough. And some of these people are in DOC custody, right? They're in the state prisons. And so the governor, who's made clear that he's not going to leave these people locked away when there's no law on the books, right? There's no reason for them to be in prison if the only reason that they're in prison was for simple possession and no other kind of additional charges that were associated with that. So the governor has signed now 15 is the last count I have, commutations from people who were in prison for that very reason. And it's possible that there are thousands of those. He says more will be coming. And he basically last week put out a thing saying anybody who is in prison for this, go ahead and apply and we'll get you out. We'll do it. It's unconditional. Yeah. Let's go.
The key is, and only this, there are a lot of cases where drug charges are added on or just part of a melange of crimes that this person is convicted of or is guilty of. So it's it's rarer than not to be in solely for singly possession. And that's why it's as low as a number as it is. Although it sounded
but he's not done yet. It's still thousands.
Yes.
There's still a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and what's interesting is they said as prosecutors are going through their docket, they were letting people go, you know, even before the governor jumped in, they were being released because they realized they didn't have a case anymore.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I think I talked to this Snohomish County prosecutor the day this decision came down. And he was already just trying to plan. He had his files out, trying to figure it out. I'm going to talk to him again tomorrow morning and see where he's at. But all prosecutors are doing that. And the other thing is, even if, so, well, if this was the only charge you had, you can get out immediately. The other problem is, though, that if you had, the way we calculate sentencing in this state is if you've got busted for this sometime before, and then you got again arrested for something else that's, you know, maybe even unrelated, it calculates into your offender score, and therefore your sentence is longer. So there's going to be lawsuits is the expectation. On top of that, there's requests coming. Actually, there is a lawsuit. I take that back. There's a class action effort already that's been filed to try to get all legal fees, all court fees and fines that people had to pay returned. And that happens at the local level, unless it's a state case. But, you know, the, all of the counties don't have that money to give back to people. It went to their budgets a long time ago. So there's that. And then there's people who were calculated in on their offender score that maybe have to get out now because it's they don't have that extra time on
or at least reduced sentences. It's a bureaucratic mess at this point to recalculate everybody's sentence who had any kind of connection with a drug offense.
Hannah, it's a nightmare. One thing
I don't understand is you talk to most police every time, or most of the time, they say when they stop somebody and they find drugs, the person will go, I don't know where that, those aren't mine. And that's why often when somebody is running from the police, if they have drugs, they'll throw them to get them as far away from them as possible. Well, I don't know where those came from. Those aren't mine. I didn't throw that, right? So isn't that normally what people will say when they get stopped and they have drugs on them? Jeez, I don't know where that came from. So the, I guess the word knowingly, that's the out, that you knowingly have the drugs. Don't most guys and gals that get stopped just say, what? Like the woman, these aren't mine. I borrowed these jeans.
And she could be lying.
It
should be lying.
Now it does.
And it does because there's... There is the scenario that this particular woman painted out was, I think, that her and her friend had gone to the thrift store. The friend had bought the pants and then gave them to her because they were too big, and she had no idea that this meth was in there. That's feasible, and unless you can prove otherwise and have some sort of probable cause or something, you're not going to be able to prove that case. It doesn't the old law did not require prosecutors to prove that the person knowingly had the drugs on them, and that can't be. That's unconstitutional is the problem. So now, as the we've got, what, 12 days left in the legislative session, and they're there's a bill. There's been a few bills. Some lawmakers, a couple of moderate Democrats, and then there's some Republicans who introduced bills that simply put that word knowingly into it, it back into the law, and that would solve it, right? But there's a lot of people who don't want that to happen. We already had a push, backed by some prosecutors, to move towards a more legalization, like what they have in Oregon now after last year. So, Democratic Senator Monica Dinger, she had the bill that is kind of the middle. It's much more towards more treatment, expanding treatment all over the place. It creates a gross misdemeanor for people under 21 who are caught with these drugs, not for anyone who is an adult, because they're going to favor, it's like the LEAD program goes statewide, essentially, is what her bill does. And so they don't want to put you in any criminal justice system. They want you to go to treatment. So Monica Dinger was asked yesterday about how this was going
to
go.
Well, we continue to have really great conversations with the House, with Senate members. I think it's really important to make sure that we're taking a look at treatment options, taking a look at the way equity and racial justice plays into this policy, and really seeing where we can get 25 votes in the Senate to send it to the House. I think there definitely is an interest in making sure the Senate acts this week so that the House has a week to do this work. So we continue to have lots of conversations, lots of collaboration, and I'm hopeful we'll see something on the floor this week in the Senate.
And so she's not sure that this is going to get done. Republican Senator Ann Rivers was asked today what the holdup is.
I would say that the prime holdup is, should there ever be a felony involved in illegal drug possession? And I think that's the largest sticking point. I mean, you've got somebody on their sixth time, they've been diverted two, three times. Maybe they need something a little bit stronger to give them a boost. So some individuals need a stronger, firmer hand. Others, not so much. Very, very concerned down here in Clark County. We've seen 13-year-olds get caught and released with heroin on them. So I think that that's really the felony piece is really important as it relates to the idea of what to do with individuals who are given chance after chance, but don't do anything to really
go ahead and work towards getting clean is what she's trying to say there, but she gets cut off. That's the deal, right? How we're going to, we need this to keep people in treatment. We can't just let it be a free for all. I think there was a Ways and Means Committee where this came up for a hearing on Saturday that I was watching, and there was all kinds of amendments, each individual amendment saying that each individual drug could still be a felony. So you had your cocaine, your heroin, your LSD was in there, and some things I've not heard of and can't pronounce. But so there's a process going on with this. There is the possibility that it comes that we leave session with nothing on the books, no drug law, and that would be a concern for many.
In effect, if we didn't pass any legislation this time out, would we, in effect, revert to what Portland voted for? And then we would just attain without a vote because of a lack of legislative action?
We would be more lenient than that because
even
in the Oregon
lenient.
Law,
okay.
it has acceptable limits that are considered for personal use. This is just, we have no law. We have no law on the books for any felony drug possession. So I've
Good
heard some cops who say that they run into people who are just doing it in front of them because there's nothing they can bust them for, though they can bust them for like paraphernalia and things like that, just not the actual drug. So there's a lot of effort going into trying to fix it.
And one little silver lining in all of this mess is that King County apparently has been de-emphasizing, thanks to Prosecutor Dan Satterberg, has been de-prosecuting these kinds of drug offenses anyway. So it doesn't impact King County as much as some of these other counties, correct?
That's true, yes. I spoke to a King County Superior Court judge some time back, but then, they voiced some concerns about their drug court and the implications there, because that's another way that you get people into treatment. But overall, they were concerned about just the state level, what this means, because it's so massive. But yeah, you're right, absolutely, because we have the LEAD program here, and we have for some time. So,
Tom, can we agree that to actually put somebody in prison for, let's assume, you and I agree on drugs, alcohol, that is a sickness. People don't want to do this drug. It's like a monster that grabs them, holds them. It's all they think about. It's everything they do to feed this desire in order to continue to be high. It is an illness. Something in the brain triggers differently for some people than for other people. Taking them and putting them in jail and not getting them treatment, not getting them healthy again, you'll just continue to have it. You'll rotate them through. King County has decided to not spend any money. So we have people wandering the streets like zombies, either punching somebody in the face, beating somebody up, stealing stuff, breaking into cars in order to feed this habit, this monster that's on their back. By not actually grabbing them and throwing them into treatment and forcing them into treatment, we will continue to have this downward spiral where the city of Seattle will be unsafe and crime will continue to skyrocket. So don't you think you should get those people, even if they only have a small amount, and actually get them into treatment somehow? Or is it the fact that going into treatment, you have to want to be in treatment? But that would cause for a rational mind to make that decision.
Well, yeah, and I don't know what kind of laws, for instance, the things that that Portland passed. I do see that as sort of the wave of the future, that if it's for small personal use. The problem is I don't really know whereof I speak on this because I don't use drugs, but I know that people smoke marijuana all the time and seem to be functioning. There are people we talked about micro dots of heroin and these kinds of things that people actually can function having used drugs. So I don't know the forcing into treatment might step on kind of some libertarian impulses that we might have as a society. Say, well, no, if you want to be able to use that, then you can, as long as it doesn't impact the rest of society. But I am all for treatment as opposed to jail. So if you can force somebody into treatment instead of forcing someone, criminalize it and just stick them in jail, I would be for that. I don't know at what point personal freedom to use drugs interferes with the societal good of having people not walking around like zombies and punching people in the face.
Well, right. You can go ahead and do the drug. Go ahead, as long as you don't have to steal from me in order to buy the drug in order to shoot it into your arm. At some point, the law, and there needs to be one, steps in to protect everybody else from your drug habit. If you want to get high and you don't have to break my window and you don't have to steal stuff out of my car and you don't have to punch me in the throat and steal my wallet in order to feed this habit, then go ahead and do whatever you want, right? Mm-hmm. But right now, the city of Seattle decides they don't want to treat it at all. They don't even King County, But if you go into Target and you steal a $300 worth of jeans or something, they may catch you, they may not. You go out in the street and you get rid of that stuff for $50. You now have $50. Target doesn't have $300, and there's more and more security. And, oh, by the way, Bartels in Seattle closes down because they can't continue to have people stealing from them. So the people that live in that area that counted on that drugstore don't have that drugstore anymore because of the crime that had taken over that store, right? So we are all suffering as a result. What's that?
Right, but the
Bartels
is one on the corner.
Bartels is still in operation. There, they just got bought out.
Right. They closed their stores because of the crime.
That's true. Yes.
True. Thank you. Right. Yes, so we are all affected by that person's drug habit. At some point, Seattle will have to do something because what doing nothing, we see what we have now before us.
Well, and doing nothing has been all the other communities in our state have been prosecuting, have been putting people in jail, and it's not working. It's worse all over the state. So that's the argument behind the legalization effort. And really important to note that this would bring much more treatment capacity into the state. They're already in the budget proposals for that to go with this Blake decision when they come out with it. And this is not like the legalization of pot, right? This is not like we're going to set up stores on the corner where people can come in and buy their heroin or whatever drug it is. This is going to be the small amounts that you possess that you won't get the felony, but you will get moved over to something like the LEED program, which is a housing first kind of formula where you're allowed to relapse and things like that until you get it right. And that has been proven, they say, to work better than what we do now.
Okay.
All right.
Good. All right. Thank you, Hannah. There she
goes. You
bet. Good. A guy the other day sitting out at Mike's Tavern in the Clum, Tom, and he's got three kids, and his oldest, I said, so where's your oldest at this point? We don't know. I said, what do you mean? He's hooked on drugs. We have sent him to four different places. At this point, he is homeless. We haven't given up on him. We love him, but there's nothing we can do anymore. We've come to the end. Oh, my God, it was horrible. And he talked about his other two kids that were sitting there having a beer with us, but the first one, firstborn, just somewhere in the streets of Seattle, they'd sent him to multiple programs. He says, but until he wants to get better, there's nothing we can do. And that's...
And yet, in the past, I know we don't have time to get into it right now, but in the past, you have called for the legalization of drugs, right? That, like, a bit in Portugal, it's a radical solution for a lot of people, but it might be the most effective.
Yeah, I mean, so far as the government will provide you with the drugs. Go ahead.
Yeah.
We'll give it to you. Here you go. You get high in the morning, get high in the afternoon. You'll kill yourself. It'll take a little longer for you to kill yourself, but you won't steal the stuff out of my car. I mean, tragic, right? It's a brave new world. That's what we'd end up with. All right, Tracy Terra, look at traffic. Say something positive, Tracy.
I love you guys.
Wow. Keel Mortgage. Thank you, Keel. Laura Keel. Hope you're listening. And everybody there working at Keel Mortgage, they're probably not listening right now. They've got their heads down and they are just going to town. Phone's ringing off the hook at over at Keel Mortgage because mortgage rates historically low and everybody wants to refinance. Why not save money every single month? Put it in your pocket or give it to the kids and let them blow it at the candy store. It's Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage for all your mortgage needs. All right, Tom, this the story that is we often go back and forth on is the media, and are people satisfied with the way they're getting the news, and is the news biased, or what do they want from the news? AP puts out a survey, and they asked a whole bunch of people, and they wanted to know, you know, what are the things that you're looking for? They run down this whole list. I guess they went on a scale of 1 to 10, what's most important to you as a reader, a consumer of the news, and they gave them all of this, and sort of see that what's the top thing that every, by the way, everybody lies on this. Here are the biggest lies in the world. 1, I've read the Bible. 2, I floss every day. And 3, I want more international news. I want more local news regarding like water troop treatment plants. People don't want any of that stuff. In fact, we stood up for the smart people today when Jacob pitched some stupid story about the guy from The Bachelor admitting that he's gay. Both Tom and I, in a deafening silence, allowed Jacob to move on to the next story. You want stories about local water treatment plants? We're doing that, because that's apparently what people want, Tom.
Actually, this is more it's more philosophical than that, though, this study. It's this big kind of academic research about what journalists think their job is and how their, you know, their readers or their viewers or their listeners think. And I think this is a really interesting experiment. And what it's not easy to pick apart, like, oh, do you want to hear about the latest Bachelor event or not? Do you want celebrity gossip? And everyone says no, but everyone reads it. I mean, we've had countless arguments about that in the newsroom and everything else, like what constitutes news. But this is based on how journalists see their job. 5 basic values. And I thought this would really be an interesting experiment to see how you feel about journalism versus how I feel about journalism versus our listeners. Because in most of these cases, at most, half of the consumers agree at most with any of these. And in a lot of cases, very few. So here are the 5 core principles that most journalists think is true to their profession. Number 1, all right, keep watch on public officials and the powerful. Do you think that's essential to the job of a journalist? I don't know if you want to go through these one by one, John, if you want to comment on that, or just should I go through all 5?
What's the axiom that to make the comfortable uncomfortable and comfort
the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, so that's 1. And that kind of reminds me, you know, there was a commercial that Dory was running a couple weeks ago about his show. And he says, I'm here to be the watchdog on the government because nobody else is doing it. That's sort of how that's what I think this first journalistic principle is. Keep watch on public officials and the powerful. Then secondly, amplify voices that often go unheard. This is a bit of maybe the version of comfort the afflicted. Does journalism have a job to amplify voices that often go unheard? That's the second principle. Third principle, society works better with information out in the open. So the journalistic instinct to publish stuff, get the stuff out, whether it should be secret or not, is secondary to the fact that the more information out there, society works better. The fourth is the more facts people have, the closer they will get to the truth. And then the final one is it's necessary to spotlight a community's problems to solve them. So I don't know how you feel about any of those justifications. But by the way, only 1 in 10 in this study supported all 5. So if I don't even know if that's true, if all, you know, every journalist would agree to all 5. But in one sense, only 1 out of 10 see the vision of what journalists do in the same way that journalists may do.
Right. I'd read in a piece why somebody would want to be a journalist. And this guy who had been as an editor for 50 years said, don't be a journalist today. There's absolutely no money in it. And 2, if you are going to be a journalist, he said, I look for angry people. I'm like, oh, my God. And most of the people that were surveyed coming out of some place like Columbia or Cornell or whatever, most of these are West Coast or East Coast cities. So they tend to be very liberal and they want to change the world. It's like, really, is that what you want to do? You want to be a journalist? You want to change the world? To me, I would be highly suspect of a person that is coming in, one, angry, with axes to grind and wanting to change the world. I like the idea of just delivering the facts, but apparently you can't do that. And that suddenly, for some reason, we all of a sudden want our journalists to have superpowers of not being biased. You know, Tom, that if you look at the history of newspapers in the United States, they have always been right, left, one group supporting one thing, another group supporting another thing. We didn't try to give anybody the impression that there wasn't a bias. There were huge biases in the newspapers. Huge.
Well, yeah, so
that's how
yellow journalism came from. You know, our own newspapers, the battle between Hearst and I forget now who he was battling with, but a Pulitzer, I think it was. So, yeah, there is a pass. Now, I don't think that means that therefore we should abandon all hope, ye who enter here, that there can be an effort at objectivity. It may not be 100% attained, but I think that I still believe that there's a journalistic impulse that can move in that direction. So okay. My question is, are you against investigative stuff?
I look at it like, okay. I look at it, I don't. And I don't even want to try to, I don't even try to make the person try to fake it. There's a quote I'd seen. This was from a historian, Chilton Williamson. He writes that the presentation of facts simply as facts, editors and writers reason, cannot accomplish the exalted goal of saving civilization. Facts need to be presented according to those rhetorical patterns of thoughts we call opinions, and patterns pointed in particular directions and convincing and imagine the jury. So you need to have all of that stuff in order to get people to get riled up or whatever, in order to have the exalted goal of changing civilization. You can't just put the facts out there for the people to then put all the facts together to then be emotionally moved in some way.
We've just scratched the surface. We barely got into the discussion. But that's
topic.
That's why the journalistic impulse to go after the people in power, like as a watchdog, I think could serve some purpose, and it needn't be on the left or on the right to do service. By the way, the irony of that quote you just read was the only thing that most people do agree with is, yeah, just give us the facts. But the guy you just read says, yeah, but facts outside of a context don't give you any, help you at all either. So
right.
Anyway, okay. Apparently journalism is a lost cause.
It's the gasoline without the match. Right. It is. The facts are just, that's the gasoline without the match. The match is the opinion you throw on there, and then boom, and then everyone says, whoa, now you got something to talk about. All right. Here's the woman that loves us both, Tom. Equally, my bad, Tracy Taylor.
I do. I love you guys a ton. Okay.
Just delighting some of the Jeopardy hijinks of Aaron Rodgers, Tom.
You're still rolling over in joy and laughter.
I hadn't seen any of it. Seen any of it. No, my guess, as much as it upsets Jacob, who still has some problem against jocks, I guess. Did jocks beat you up in high school or whatever you went to? I know you were homeschooled. So did your mom stick you in a locker or something like that?
No, I don't know if I can really explain even what my... It bothers me for some reason to have Aaron Rodgers take over Jeopardy. Yeah, I'll let you... Well, yeah, keep going, John.
No, because you don't like the fact that he's a jock. And they're like, everything comes to the quarterback. The quarterbacks get the girl. The quarterbacks get everything. And then the quarterbacks get a chance to host Jeopardy. Is that what it is?
Jacob's resentment.
It feels like Jeopardy's one of the last high-profile nerddom things that nerdy people can still have. He's overstepping.
Nerd celebrity.
He doesn't belong there. Like Ken Jennings would be better in there, right? Is that what it is?
Well, no, honestly, we don't have to get into it, but I think it's a classic broadcasting job, and I want someone with an interesting voice to read the questions. Aaron Rodgers doesn't really have it. I don't think Ken Jennings really has it either. I don't necessarily know if anyone they've really tried has impressed me in that sense. But that's all I want is just someone who reads the questions with a pleasant voice.
Here's his
title for 400. In the 1960s, these Midwesterners earned 5 NFL championship trophies. Green Bay Packers? Dennis, go
try
again,
title
I guess.
For 600.
Okay. First of all, you know that the producers want him to win the thing and have the position because that's why they wrote that joke in there. For him to be able to react to it. They've asked other questions as well. So they're slanting it in his direction so that it gives him a chance to sort of shine on the thing. He actually sounds a little like Alex Trebek when he reads that question. Did you pick that up as well, Tom?
No, I didn't. In fact, I thought that was an interesting observation that Jacob made, that he doesn't have the kind of broadcaster voice that we're most accustomed to. And I guess the question is that what we want? Like you, we all think you have the perfect, you know, game show host voice. Your delivery, I think, probably would sell even if you don't like the show as much as, say, an Aaron Rodgers. It might be like Ryan Seacrest. People seem to like Ryan Seacrest's voice. He's good on the radio. He's good on American Idol. That maybe that's what they should be after rather than somebody who actually cares about the game like Trebek or Jennings or even Rodgers.
Here's more from Rodgers.
Another great game today, closing out the week. Final Jeopardy category is American literature and The Clue. One edition of this 1930s novella shows a farm within the silhouette of a rabbit. You have 30 seconds. Good luck. Jennifer, we start with you. Tough game today, but let's see how you did.
What's the answer, Tom? Because
I don't know. I mean, Velveteen Rabbit. I mean, I can't.
You put down what is Animal Farm? No, sorry, that's incorrect. What did you wager? Nothing. You're still at 3,800. Over to our champion Pasquale. See what you wrote down. You said, "What is Of Mice and Men?" Yes, of course, John Steinbeck's novel about Lenny and George, who talk about having their own rabbit farm one day. You're going to add to your total, if you wagered anything, $4,000, $16,200 for you. Over to Dennis on the end, looking stoic. You could not be caught today. Let's see what you put down. What is Animal Farm? And you erased Harvey, but either way, that's incorrect. Didn't have to wager anything. You wagered $800. So you are at $25,900, and you are the new Jeopardy champion. Dennis, congratulations.
Wow, Of Mice and Men, you put a picture of rabbits?
You've changed your mind, John?
Yeah, because he's at that point of the show, it's a culmination. It's all coming to, and now let's see what we have. You put down not, you want to, you're building. They're going to reveal this thing. Who's going ahead? What did you wager? $800. I mean, you need that kind of like, right? To him, it's just like, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, he'll get the job.
You think so, huh?
He's boring.
They need to get more. Yeah, they need boring. They need more nerd. They need the nerd audience. They've got the nerd audience.
Nerds
aren't going it. Nerds aren't going anywhere. You need more. Got to get the women and the non-nerd women.
I mean, well,
Tracy Taylor, look at
Tracy. Do you qualify?
No, I'm not watching because it's him, though. You know what I mean? He's just boring. Even the sound of his voice makes me go, ugh.